السلام علیکم اسٹوڈینٹس, آپ کو منسٹری آف سائنس اینڈ ٹیکنالوجی پاکستان ورچوئل یونیورسٹی اور مبشر ہمایوں کی طرف سے خوش آمدید. ویلکم ٹو اندر لیکچر ان دی کورس آن فائنینشیل مینجمنٹ. ٹوڈے وی آر گوئنگ ٹو ٹاک اباؤٹ پروجیکٹ کیش فلوز اینڈ این پی وی اینڈ آئی آر آر ایز اٹ ریلیٹس ٹو پروجیکٹس. In other words, investments in real assets. So, to begin with, what do we mean by investments in real assets? Well, real assets would include fixed assets, and fixed assets such as plant, machinery, equipment, office, building, land, and even stock and inventory that is associated with the fixed assets or permanent assets. Real asset projects can also include entire businesses. So when you talk about investing in a machinery, that is an example of a fixed asset. When you talk about investing in a running business or in a new business, well, that business is also a collection of assets, a collection of fixed assets, a collection of working capital and of intangible assets. So you can also treat an entire new business as a project, and you can calculate the NPV or net present value of a new business the same way that you calculate the NPV of an asset that generates cash flows, because businesses also generate cash flows. Now, we have to keep in mind that calculating NPVs for real assets or businesses is not as easy as we might think. We have a relatively simple formula for calculating NPV, but the major issue is how to estimate or forecast the different variables that are used in the NPV equation. In other words, first and foremost, the CF or cash flows that we use in the NPV equation are based on forecasts. And we will have to study first in detail how you estimate the net after-tax cash flows that we use in the NPV equation. That's not an easy task. And the majority of the errors and mistakes in NPV calculations arise because of a mistake in the forecasting or the estimation. Please keep that one in mind. So we need to spend a considerable amount of time making sure that the forecast of the cash flows is accurate. Then you also need to forecast the life or anticipated life of a particular project, and that too is to a certain extent guesswork. Financial accounting, you talked about perpetual concerns or companies that go on forever, but in fact businesses can have a finite life, and the life of the project, which in the NPV equation appears as N, is something that can affect the net present value calculation. And finally, the matter of the discount rate. Picking the right discount rate, or I, is not an easy matter, and we'll study it in detail when we talk about risk. So this, as well as the other reasons that we just mentioned related to forecasting and estimation, make NPV a tricky exercise. So let's begin with a relatively simple formula for calculating the net incremental after-tax cash flows. they're defined as the net operating income, which you can get from the pro forma P&L or income statement, plus the depreciation. You need to add that back because it was a non-cash expense, plus any net working capital requirements for the project, plus some other cash flows that we associate with net present value. And specifically, what are those other kinds of cash flows? Well, broadly speaking, there are three types. We need to take into account opportunity costs that are associated with a new project. What does this mean? Supposing that you are about to invest in a new project that might be a small factory with, let's say, only 4 weaving looms. You need a certain plot of land, and you already have that land from before. Now, when you are calculating the NPV for this weaving loom project, you have to include the value of the land that you're using. Although you are not buying that land, you already have it, but that land has a certain market value. It has a certain opportunity cost. You could have sold that land at a certain price and received cash, but you didn't. Instead, you are using this land in your new project. So don't forget to include opportunity costs into the net present value calculation in the form of cash flows. The other thing that you have to add is the cash flows associated with what we call externalities. What are externalities? Well, externalities are basically incidental cash flows that arise because of the effect of the new project on the existing or running business. Misal ke taur pe, agar koi company ek nayi product line develop karti hai, agar pehle wo ایک سرٹن برانڈ کی صابن بنا رہے تھے اور اب وہ یہ فیصلہ کرتے ہیں کہ انہیں ایک نئی یا میڈیکیٹڈ برانڈ کی صابن بنانی ہے, تو اس نئے پروڈکٹ کو لانچ کرنے کی وجہ سے جو رننگ پروڈکٹ ہے یا ایگزسٹنگ پروڈکٹ ہے اس کی سیلز ریونیو پہ ایک نیگیٹو اثر پڑ سکتا ہے. ان ادر ورڈز, دس از واٹ وی کال کینیبلائزیشن. When you are embarking on a new project, you might either hurt or increase the sales of your existing products. And that is an externality. You have to include whatever negative or positive effect, incremental effect, that this new project will have on your existing sales, because that is connected to the new project. One thing that you need to exclude from your NPV calculation is what's referred to as sunken costs. Sunk costs are those which have already been undertaken in the past. Now, whether you decide to go and invest your money in the new project or not, you can't recover your money that has already been sunk. تو مثال کے طور پہ, اگر آپ نے یا کسی کمپنی نے کسی قسم کا ایکسپورٹ یا امپورٹ لائسنس, جن کی ریکوائرمنٹ اب نہیں ہے لیکن پہلے تھی, وہ خریدا ہوا تھا, اور اس کے کافی سال بعد اگر آپ یہ فیصلہ کرتے ہیں کہ آپ نے کسی ایکسپورٹ بزنس میں جانا ہے, تو وہ سنکن کاسٹ, وہ پیسہ جو آپ نے لائسنس کو نکالنے میں انویسٹ کیا تھا, وہ آپ اس نئے پروجیکٹ کی کیش فلوز میں شامل نہیں کر سکتے. اس لیے کیونکہ اس پروجیکٹ کا ہونا یا نہ ہونا اس ایکسپینس کو کبھی بھی ریکور کرنے میں مدد نہیں دے گا. لہذا دی پوائنٹ ٹو ریمبر از دیٹ sunken costs should not be included with the project cash flows and NPV calculation. Now, the next point that I want to talk about is the three broad areas in time that you need to consider cash flows. When you are embarking on investment in fixed assets or in working capital, as we need to look at in the case of capital budgeting, then there are three broad time periods which you need to look at. One time period is that at the time of the investment. The second one is the period during the life of the project. And finally, the third period is the termination point or the termination date for the project. And there are cash flows associated with each one of these periods. So let's talk about the kind of cash flows that you can expect to see in each one of these periods. The first one is the cash flows at the time of investment, let's say the present time. Here, the kind of cash flows that you have already seen are the initial investment, which is a cash outflow, represented by a downward pointing arrow in the cash flow diagram. You have another cash outflow in the form of net working capital requirements or mobilization requirements to get the project started. This too appears as a downward pointing arrow at the present point in time. And you can, if you like, add the two downward pointing arrows at the same point in time, i.e. the initial investment and the initial net working capital requirement can be added up because they are taking place at the same point in time, which is the present. In addition to this, you would need to subtract any tax that would have to be paid on the sale of an old asset that you might be liquidating or selling off. If you are selling it off at a price that is higher than the book value. Now, this goes back to what you learned in financial accounting. Capital budgeting mein, jaise maine zikr kiya, amuman aap ek nai investment fixed assets mein isliye karte hain, kyunki aapki koi purani machinery ya equipment depreciate ho gayi hoti hai, ya outdated ho gayi hoti hai. Us depreciated ya purani equipment ko jab aap bechte hain, اور اگر آپ اس کو ایک ایسی قیمت پہ بیچیں جو اپنا بک ویلیو سے زیادہ ہے تو اس پہ آپ کو اس گین آن سیل آف انویسٹمنٹ پہ آپ کو ٹیکس ادا کرنا پڑے گا, کیپٹل گینز ٹیکس, اور اس کو آپ کو انیشل کیش فلوز میں سے سبٹریکٹ کرنا ہوگا. آئیے اب دوسرے پیریڈ کے بارے میں بات کرتے ہیں. The second period that we will look at as far as cash flows are concerned for real projects is the major duration of the life of the project. Here we are talking about operating cash flows in the form of cash receipts from sales revenue and other income, as well as cash expenses or payments in the form of operating costs and administrative costs and marketing costs, etc., but all on a cash basis. We also need to take in account over here if there are any tax savings that are associated with the increased depreciation that you are showing in your P&L. Remember, as I just mentioned, if you are replacing an old equipment with a new one, that is the subject of capital budgeting, and investment in fixed assets. When you are retiring an old piece of equipment, then probably in its final year of use, you allocated a very small amount as depreciation expense in the profit and loss statement. Now, all of a sudden, when you invest in a new equipment with a higher purchase price or a higher market value, then you can expense out a higher amount in the form of depreciation. Since this higher amount of depreciation is a non-cash expense, you can add it back to your cash flows, and you would be adding back the difference between the depreciation that you recorded for the old equipment that you retired and the depreciation value for this new equipment. Finally, the last period that we need to consider cash flows for is the termination date. And at the termination date, or in other words, the point at which the project life ends, you need to take into account the salvage value at which you can sell this equipment or machinery or business. This is the value that might be attached with an asset that is perhaps not in proper working condition. When you sell this equipment or machinery, you will receive money. So it is a cash inflow. The salvage value is cash received, and it is shown by an upward pointing arrow in the last year of the company's life. And in addition to that, you would also recover whatever working capital you had invested in this project at the beginning by liquidating the account receivables and whatever other accrued items that you had assimilated during the course of the life of this project. From financial accounting, most of you would be familiar with the four basic types of financial statements. I have here with me an annual report that contains these four financial statements, and one of them, as we mentioned, is the cash flow statement. The cash flow statement is shown here in the annual report, and this is the consolidated statement of changes in financial position, also known as the cash flow statement. Please familiarize yourself with the format and the calculations for the cash flow statement. Right now, I'll go over a very, very simple cash flow based on the pro forma P&L or the budgeted P&L for a new project or the forecasted P&L. The main items that we need to consider for this course are, first of all, the net operating income. This is the estimated net operating income from your pro forma P&L. Let's suppose that that might have a value of 1,000 rupees. Now, how do we come up with this net operating income? Again, this is income, so it is based on certain cost savings minus expenses, all kinds of expenses, including administrative, cost of goods sold, and marketing expenses. The next thing that we need to consider in order to compute the net cash flows is the depreciation. And we need to add back this depreciation to the net operating income because it was a non-cash expense. So let's assume that the depreciation expense in the P&L was 100. So now we would need to add back this 100 to the net operating income. Another thing that we need to add back is the expected net working capital required. And let us assume that for the new project that you're about to undertake, you will need to invest another 200 rupees in the form of working capital to get the project going. This is money that you might have to invest in buying stock, in the case of the cafeteria that we spoke about earlier, this working capital can be included in the form of stock such as paper goods and food items and so on. The next thing we need to do is to subtract any additional investments that we are making in fixed assets. Remember, investments in fixed assets are cash outflows. So they need to be subtracted. We need to add any tax savings that are taking place from changes in depreciation. In other words, if the amount of expense that you're showing as depreciation is going up, then that is a non-cash expense. So you would get that cash back, but you have saved actual cash in the form of having paid less taxes. When you show higher depreciation in your P&L, then you are reducing your net income and you are reducing the cash you have to pay in the form of taxation. So this is a tax saving, and tax savings need to be added back. They are positive cash flows. You also need to add back any cash that might be associated with the sale of an asset at its salvage value. That is a cash inflow represented again by an upward pointing arrow. And finally, if you are selling any assets above their book value, then you are making what is known in financial accounting as a capital gain, and that is also taxable. So you would need to account for whatever tax that you have paid by selling the asset at a price that is higher than the book value. When you take a look at the slide, you can add or subtract these different cash flows that you need to consider, generally speaking, and you would come up with a net cash flow based on these additions and subtractions. In our particular example, that final figure is 1,000 rupees. Some final notes that you need to keep in mind regarding cash flows. One of them is that if you are analyzing cash flows that have already been published in a pro forma P&L or pro forma cash flow statement, then keep in mind that generally speaking, management overestimates the cash flows. In other words, they generally present an optimistic picture of the cash flows and an inflated net present value. So generally, this is what we term as an upward bias in the net present value calculations based on forecasted cash flows. We spoke earlier when we talked about financial accounting, about window dressing, and this is one of the forms that window dressing can take. One very, very important issue that I'd like to introduce at this point, although we will discuss it in greater mathematical detail later on, is concerned with investments that companies make even when the project NPVs are less than zero. You will find very, very often companies making investments in projects even though their net present value is less than zero. Why do companies do that? There's a very, very important concept that we need to understand. Companies invest cash even in projects that have NPVs less than zero. And the reason is because generally there is a hidden value in these projects. This hidden value is a form of opportunity that we call an option. And opportunities and options carry value. Specifically, what do we mean when we talk about options? These days, you'll find that there is a flurry of international and multinational companies that are investing money in China, even though the net present value of their ventures or projects may be significantly less than zero. Why are they doing this? It's because they are sacrificing short and medium-term cash flows for long-term market share. They see China as having a certain potential in the long term as far as its huge market size, and they are willing to invest in projects that might have negative net present value based on present estimates. You also find the same thinking in the technology sector. Specifically, we can think of cases such as Amazon.com, where the management and the chief executive have chosen to invest money in a project and new projects that might be yielding negative net present value. Why? Because they are investing on the assumption that the client base or customer base or market share will grow so much that at a certain point in future, they will compensate for the negative cash flows in the earlier part of the project. So this is a very, very important point. Keep in mind that these options are hidden in real asset projects and investment opportunities, and they might not necessarily be visible to you. When we talk about the option for a company to abandon or to end a project, that too has a value attached to it. For example, if you find that one of your projects is losing money, then you have the option to end that project and thereby to cut your losses. This is an option that has value. And this is in contrast to a project that might be very difficult to abandon because the project might have connected to it a customer base that has or includes a very large segment of the population. What I'm saying is it might be very difficult for you to kill or end a project like a commercial bank because that concerns the public at large and that concerns a very wide depositor base. But it might be much easier for you to end a very small project like the one we talked about, which is a small weaving unit of, let's say, 4 looms. The other simplistic understanding of options comes when you talk about investing in a bad project. Remember, when you make the decision to invest cash in a project, then you are taking money and time away from other projects that you could have invested in later on. So you lose option the moment you commit or you decide to allocate your money to a particular project. And later on, when we talk about options pricing theory, the binomial model, and the Black and Scholes model, we will get a numerical and quantitative understanding about how to value options. So just to link what I'm talking about right now with what we spoke about earlier, in order to forecast the net cash flows for a new project, you can use the percent of sales forecast method that we spoke about a few lectures back in order to calculate the expected cash revenues. You can add to them whatever other expected cash revenues you anticipate from other than operations. You can add any cost savings that you expect from this new project. Besides the incremental revenue, there might be cost savings, and you need to add them because they too constitute a form of revenue. And then from this you need to subtract the expected cash expenses. You also need to take into account the impact of depreciation, which is generally added back because it is a non-cash expense that was recorded in the P&L. You also need to take into account the impact on taxes that arises from the change in depreciation and from the sale of old equipment or machinery at a salvage value that might be higher than the book value. And together, then, for each one of the years in the pro forma cash flow statement, which is a forecasted cash flow statement, you can come up with the net incremental after-tax cash flows. یہ دھیان رکھے گا کہ سب سے زیادہ نیٹ پریزنٹ ویلیو کی کیلکولیشن میں غلطیاں کیش فلو فور کاسٹنگ کی وجہ سے ہوتی ہیں. تو یہاں پہ آپ کو توجہ سے ایسٹیمیشنز اور فور کاسٹنگ کرنی پڑے گی. آئیے اب ہم ایک اور پیچیدہ ایشو آئی آر آر کے حوالے سے ڈسکس کرتے ہیں. دیٹ از دا کیس where you can get multiple IRRs. In other words, as I mentioned, when you solve the IRR equation, and if that equation is a second or higher degree polynomial, in other words, if the life of the project is more than 2 years, and in addition to that, if there is a cash outflow, a net cash outflow taking place sometime in the future, besides the initial cash outflow in the form of initial investment, then the cash flow diagram is known as a non-normal cash flow diagram, and you can have multiple IRRs. In other words, there might be more than one real numbers or real roots that solve this particular polynomial equation. This equation being the equation for IRR. So, let's take a look at a simple numerical case where you can face this situation. Supposing that you have a particular investment opportunity. In that opportunity, you initially invest 100 rupees, and after 1 year, you will receive 500 rupees in the form of profit, cash profit, and after 2 years, you will lose 500 rupees in the form of a net cash loss. Now, when you take a look at the cash flow diagram for this particular investment opportunity, you will see a downward pointing arrow at the present point in time, which is minus 100 rupees. Then you will see an upward pointing arrow at the end of the first year, which will show 500 rupees. And then you will show a downward pointing arrow in the third year, showing the net cash loss of 500 rupees. If we solve the IRR equation for this particular cash flow diagram, then that equation is NPV is equal to 0, which is equal to minus 100 plus 500 divided by 1 plus I minus 500 divided by 1 plus I squared. And I over here again refers to the IRR. When you solve this equation, this is a quadratic equation. And quadratic equations have two roots. In this particular case, it has two real number roots. And those roots are the IRR values, which happen to be 38% and 250%. So now, you're in a problem. تو اس پرابلم کے بارے میں کیا کیا جائے؟ ہمارے پاس آئی آر آر کے دو آنسرز ہیں، ایک 38% اور دوسرا 250% اپروکسیمیٹلی. کون سی ویلیو پک کی جائے؟ دی آنسر ٹو دس ریلیٹیولی ڈیفیکلٹ کوشچن لائز ان اوائڈنگ بوتھ آف دیز آنسرز. We use a technique that is known as modified IRR or MIRR. And the basic logic in this technique is to deal with separate cash inflows and separate cash outflows for each year or each period in time. Aapko yaad hoga ki isse pehle humne net cash flows ke bare mein baat ki, jisme cash receipts minus cash payments gave us the net cash flow. But in this approach, you keep the cash inflows separate from the cash outflows for each year. So for each year, you would show two arrows at least at each point in time, one upward pointing arrow and the other downward pointing arrow. You keep these inflows and outflows separate and you show them on the cash flow diagram. Then, after showing the cash inflows and outflows separately on the cash flow diagram by means of upward and downward pointing arrows at each point in time, the next step is to bring back or discount all the future outflows or downward pointing arrows and to discount them to the present. The third thing you do is that you take all of the cash inflows or upward pointing arrows and you compound them to the future endpoint, which represents the end of the life of the project. So you have all of the cash outflows discounted to the present and all of the cash inflows or upward pointing arrows compounded to the future. And then what you do is you figure out the rate of return which will equate or make equal this future value of the cash inflows to the present value of the cash outflows. And that particular discount factor is known as the modified IRR or MIRR. So the formula then for the modified internal rate of return is equal to the future value of all of the cash inflows divided by the present value of all of the cash outflows. One question that will naturally come to your mind is, well, aren't we using two interest rates in this equation? One is the modified IRR and the other is the discount rate that you used to bring all the outflows to the present and to take all of the cash inflows to the future. And you would be absolutely correct. You're right. In this particular formula, we are using two rates. One of them is the rate that we're interested in calculating, the modified internal rate of return, and the other one is the discount rate, which is used to discount the cash outflows to the present and to compound the cash inflows to the future. Which discount rate should you use for this compounding and discounting? Well, you can use the opportunity cost of capital, which we talked about earlier, and quite simply you could pick a rate of return that's offered in the PLS account at any bank. So to be more specific then, the MIRR is equal to the sum of the cash flows multiplied by 1 plus the discount rate K raised to the power T, all divided by the sum of the cash outflows divided by 1 plus the discount rate or K raised to the power T. When you complete your homework assignments, please be sure to do them on your own, because these problems will constitute the formative concept building, and it's very, very important to understand financial management by solving problems. So please spend some time solving the problems that we distribute to you, as well as doing extra problems in Brigham and Kapensky. The final point that I want to discuss in this particular lecture, as far as NPV is concerned, is a relatively complex issue, but one that we see frequently. You will recall that in our example in which we compared the savings certificate to the bank deposit, that the lives of the two investments were different. The bank deposit's life was 2 years, and the savings certificate's life was 1 year. And strictly speaking, you cannot compare the NPVs of investments with different lifespans. What you need to do is compare all the investments on the same lifespan. So you have two options. One option is what we call the common life approach, and quite simply you find out what the least common multiple for the life of all the projects is. If, for example, you have one project whose life is 2 years and another project whose life is 1 year, then the least common multiple is 2 years, and you will repeat the cash flow pattern for the investment whose life is 1 year for a period of 2 years. And then you would calculate its net present value over the 2 year cycle, and then compare that to the NPV of the investment which was 2 years to begin with. Similarly, if you are comparing two investments, one of whom that has a life of 3 years and the other investment which has a life of 2 years, then the least common multiple for these two lives is 6 years. So you would have to repeat the cash flow diagram. In the case of the 3 year project, you would repeat the cash flow diagram twice, covering all 6 years. And in the case of the 2 year project, you would repeat its cash flows 3 times, thereby covering the 6 year cycle. And then you would calculate the net present values of both projects for a 6 year period and find out which one is greater. And that would be the project that you would choose. This is the common life approach. There is another approach, and that is known as the equivalent annual annuity approach. In this approach, what we do is we calculate the straightforward NPV as you did before, and then you multiply it by an annuity factor. And that factor is a factor that is worth remembering. That factor is equal to 1 plus r to the n, all divided by 1 plus r to the n minus 1. R over here is the discount rate, and n is the actual life of the project. So what this equivalent annual annuity method does is it converts projects of different lives to annuities over the same duration in time, so that now you have two projects of the similar duration, and so you can compare their net present values. Just to repeat, in the case of the equivalent annuity method, you would calculate the modified net present value by multiplying the NPV that you calculated in the straightforward manner that we discussed before, and you multiply that NPV by the equivalent annuity factor, which is 1 plus r to the n divided by 1 plus r to the n minus 1. Finally, something that you need to keep in mind when doing discounting and computing net present values is the effect of inflation. We won't go into the effect of inflation in detail because one can argue that the effect of inflation is set off against each other, both in the numerator and the denominator of the discounted cash flows. In the net present value formula, we have cash flows in the numerator and the discount rate in the denominator. You can argue that inflation increases cash flows, and inflation also increases the nominal discount or interest rate in the denominator. So you can say that the effect of inflation more or less cancels out. Where the effect of inflation does not always cancel out, you can add a separate discount factor in the denominator. So in addition to the 1 plus I raised to the power t in the denominator of the NPV cash flow term, you can also add another factor, which is 1 divided by 1 plus g raised to the power t, where g represents the inflation growth rate. Having completed the wrap-up for this particular lecture, I would like to thank you for your kind patience. Aapko Ministry of Science and Technology Pakistan, Virtual University aur Mubashir Humayun ki taraf se bahut bahut shukriya. Khuda hafiz aur assalamu alaikum.